The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Folks, while we were gone, the White House published a devastating climate change report that predicts crop production will decline, food and waterborne illness will spread, it will be hard to breathe, and more of us will die. More of us? They know we all eventually die, right? Do some of us have to die twice now? This report is an urgent call to fight climate change. So, naturally, the Trump White House released it the Friday after Thanksgiving. They actually hid it in a Tupperware with the leftover green bean casserole. No one's opening that thing. The onions are no longer crispy, so who cares? But some nosy Nelly reporters out there actually got it and read it, and some had questions for the president.
Mr. President, have you read the climate report yet? I've seen it. I've read some of it, and it's fine.
Fine? If I had to describe this report in one word, it would not be fine. It would be a different word that begins with F. As in, if you don't believe in climate change at this point, you are fined in the head. Now, the next day, Trump doubled down on his climate denial, telling the Washington Post,
"One of the problems that a lot of people like myself, we have very high levels of intelligence, but we're not necessarily such believers."
Sir, when it comes to your high level of intelligence, we're not believers either. The president had some old-fashioned ideas about what's happening with our climate, saying,
if you go back and look at the articles, they talked about global freezing. They talked about, at some point, the planets could have freeze to death.
Everything he believes is from old magazine articles. It doesn't work that way, sir. Nick Nolte was the sexiest man alive in 1992, but since then, he too has been ravaged by coastal erosion. Okay? The science is in. But maybe the best part of the entire interview was his explanation of how climate works.
You look at our air and our water, and it's right now at a record clean. But when you look at China, and you look at parts of Asia, and when you look at South America, and when you look at many other places in this world, including Russia, including just many other places, the air is incredibly dirty. And when you're talking about an atmosphere, oceans are very small, and it blows over, and it sails over.
I have heard better explanations of weather from toddlers on Benadryl.
As have I. Oh, there we go. All right, welcome to a Friday, everyone. We made it. Barely, but we made it. The reason I started with that clip of Stephen Colbert talking about climate change is because we're going to deal with it a bit on today's show. Our old pal Gaius Publius will be along to talk about a couple of climate reports that have recently surfaced. Of course, the most recent one a week ago today, the day after Thanksgiving, I forget what they called it here. Hold on. Let's see. The National Climate Assessment from the White House that they tried to bury on the Friday after Thanksgiving. So we'll get to that. I thought the oceans were large, too. That's why Dump couldn't get the aid to Puerto Rico. He changes his lies based on who he's talking to. I don't know. I don't think he remembers from one day to the next. Anyway, we will talk about that today. We're also, we are in case you didn't know, open enrollment time. It doesn't, whether you're on Medicare or, you know, trying to navigate your way through the Affordable Care Act Health Exchange, as I am, I've been in health insurance hell for the last couple of weeks. And I don't see any easy way out anytime soon. But today we're going to talk a little bit about Medicare, because if you watch television, you're inundated with ads for Medicare supplement plans. And I always, you know, I just turned 59, so I'm still 6 years away from Medicare, which I've been sort of bitching to myself about, thinking it would be so much easier if I was just on Medicare. I wouldn't have to deal with all this bullshit. But then now my husband turned 65 last year. And so we went through the whole thing to find a supplemental plan. And let me tell you, it's not as straightforward and uncomplicated as well as I was led to believe, and therefore I led you to believe. I did know that, you know, that I had been warned against Medicare Advantage. But then faced with, you know, getting David onto a Medicare plan, the ones from the ones that offer dental and vision. Regular Medicare doesn't offer dental or vision, and they have zero dollar premiums. And I want to know how they can do this. So let's get our pal, Alex Lawson, on the phone. Now, Alex Lawson is the executive director of Social Security Works. And as the name implies, it's about Social Security, but they also deal with Medicare and Medicaid, you know, those entitlements that the government wants to warn us off of. I have it ringing here. We're calling Alex Lawson. He's actually in Burlington, Vermont for, and I hope he listens for the phone. He knows I'm calling, but he might be sort of busy right now. Anyway, he's in Burlington, Vermont for that Bernie Palooza. Come on, Alex.
Hi. Uh-oh. Please leave your name and phone number. Leave it clearly.
That's not Alex. Okay. That I think, once again, I think I'm having weird phone issues. All right. I got to, you know, never always something. It's always something, right? Yeah. I dialed that. Oh, my God. All right. So I'm going to close this out, and I'm going to open it again. Nope, that didn't work. I'm sorry. This is the last thing I wanted to be doing today. Why can't I even quit out of Skype? Sign out. All right. And maybe I sign out and then sign back in. I'll try this. Come on. Oh, shit. I'm screwed. All right. You know what? Let me play something while I figure this out. I got to put on my producer hat because we're all messed up here. So we'll take a quick break and come back on the other side, hopefully with Alex Lawson next on the Nicole Sandler Show. We'll be right back.
Trump's White House says poverty is passé. What do you say? I'll tell you what I say today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. Someone needs to buy a Grassroots USA tour package for the members of Donald Trump's Council of Economic Advisors so they can at least visit the real world one time in their lives. The three advisors are ivory tower ideologues whose sole professional expertise seems to be twisting reality to fit their boss's right-wing fantasia. In July, for example, the trio issued a fairy tale disguised as an official government report on poverty, essentially asserting that our U.S. of A. no longer has a poverty problem. Poof, declared these learned ones from on high, the need for food stamps, Medicaid, public housing, and other assistance has virtually disappeared in our land. Jobs abound, they lectured. The economy is pumping out great gobs of new wealth, and bluebirds of happiness are spreading joy everywhere. You can imagine the comfort that this report has brought to the 45 million Americans now living below the poverty line. That line means they're trying to make ends meet on only $25,000 a year. Not per person, but for a family of four. Let's see any of Trump's advisors try to live on that before smugly claiming that poverty is largely over. What's at work here is the political manipulation of statistics to support Trump's ideological delusion that poor people are losers who are addicted to safety net programs. As a narcissistic son of privilege, he is out to cut those programs and to impose strict work requirements on families seeking public assistance. Never mind that most recipients of aid already work, subjected to the hardships of poverty by the low wages of their jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, but that's the real world, and it doesn't mesh with Trump and company's cruel self-deception that basic humane benefits make poverty too pleasant. They're imposing a Dickensian governing ethic that is fundamentally obscene. And even more obscene, it's un-American.
If you'd like more of Jim Hightower's real populism, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter gives you the real lowdown on which corporations, by name, are doing what to the middle class, our environment, and our democracy. Each month, the Hightower Lowdown brings you facts you didn't know, along with actions you can take to fight back. It also comes with a sense of humor. Hightower believes we can fight the gods and still have fun. Plus, get this, it's cheap. Only $15 brings you 12 issues a year. For real populism, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
All right, I'm back. Let's keep our fingers crossed that this works. Otherwise, I give up and I'm going home. I know I'm home already. All right, we're trying to call Alex Lawson. He's the executive director of Social Security Works. Hopefully, my phone won't act up here again. I had gremlins last week, and it seems they're back again. It's my computer. Anyway, Alex Lawson, is he there? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Alex?
I am here.
Hey, it's Nicole Sandler calling. So you're up in Burlington, yes?
I am in beautiful Burlington. It's nice and snowy out here. I got to walk around. It's lovely up here.
Yeah, I hear. It's gorgeous. Now, the reason you're in Burlington, Vermont, is there's this big Bernie Palooza thing going on. What is this all about?
The Sanders Institute gathering is really, it's pretty awesome. And I'll remove the word pretty. It is awesome. There's a lot. It's policy focused. This is a C3 institute focused on ideas. And this gathering has brought together just an amazing array of progressive intellectuals, policy wonks across, and they're not, and internationally as well.
Wow.
Really drawing the important, you know, just showing the importance that this is not, the rising authoritarianism that we're fighting here in America is not a unique American problem. I was just talking with a Brazilian politician who's fighting against Bolsonaro, the authoritarian who just took power there.
Yep.
It's really, this is, I'm very proud to see progressives acting in this manner, where we're getting together, talking about these issues, and sort of reminding ourselves that in solidarity, if we don't get into our little silos, when we all work together and raise our voices together, we can make these huge, bold, transformational changes and build the world that we want to see. So Bernie Palooza, the Sanders Institute gathering, I think so far has been really, you know, you see a lot of these things, a lot of conferences and whatnot. And this one does have a different feel to it. It really does feel very action focused on getting great policies, policies that will help people and really examining them from all different angles.
That's great. I heard that Bernie took a bunch of people across the border into Canada yesterday to visit a pharmacy.
You know what? I did not, because I've been in, I have not read that, but that sounds exactly like what he is doing and what Social Security Works, my organization, what we're working with him to really draw attention on that issue, the like ludicrousness of the pharmaceutical industry being able to charge whatever they want for drugs that primarily were produced with taxpayer resources in the first place. And I do want to point out one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Canada, you get a huge differential on many drugs, but Canada is the second most expensive market in the world. One in five Canadians can't afford the drugs that they need either.
Wow.
So this is, again, it's not like, hey, we just need to do what Canada is doing and we'll be fine. We need to work with our Canadian allies to take on the multinational pharmaceutical industry. That's what they do. That's what Wall Street does. They understand that it's a global a global game that they're currently winning right now.
Yeah. Alex Lawson is with us, as he just said, from Burlington, Vermont today. But Alex, in his regular life, is the executive director of Social Security Works. Now, as the name implies, you're concerned with Social Security, but you also really deal with all things Medicare, Medicaid, what the Republicans lovingly refer to as entitlements, what I refer to as earned benefits. This is what you're working, your organization works to not only save, but to enhance, to make things better. And we have to applaud Bernie Sanders because before he embarked on his run for the presidency in 2016 or a year earlier, Medicare for All was something that a few of us talked about, but it wasn't the widely accepted, movement that we now see a majority of Americans are in favor of. And
that's exactly right. 70% now.
That's amazing.
They would call you who have been talking about this for a long time, Nicole. They'd call you fringe, but now it's very clear
exactly.
That what they meant was visionary.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in point of fact, it was just the corporate media were not allowing the story to get out there. And when the story got out there and the American people understand the magnitude of the ripoff that's being perpetrated on us every day, that's when you get 70% of the American people being like, no, I think I'll go with this system where some bureaucrat in a $3,000 suit is not holding my health and my life hostage mm-hmm. so that they can buy another yacht. I'd mm-hmm. rather have a system that is focused on the public health and is accountable to the people and not at extracting my health to enhance shareholder value.
Yeah, you and me both. But it's, the main reason I wanted to talk with you today is because, as anybody who watches television knows, we're in open enrollment time. Now, I, being too young for Medicare, it's something that I bitch to myself about constantly because I'm dealing with the healthcare exchange and the Affordable Care Act and the insanity that's going along with that right now. But my husband is on Medicare. He just was eligible starting last year. And I always thought, once I get to Medicare, it'll be easy. It's so simple. The fact of the matter is it really isn't. And we watch these commercials for policies, for a supplemental policy for Medicare, because as we know, Medicare only covers 80% and you're responsible for the balance. And then there's the Medicare Part D, the drug thing, which is all screwed up anyway. But it's really not so cut and dry. It is kind of complicated. What I want to ask you about is, they advertise these $0 premiums for these policies, Medicare policies, that also include vision and dental. Well, Medicare doesn't include vision and dental. And if you get the regular Medicare supplemental policy, it doesn't include vision or dental either. These are Medicare Advantage plans. Can you explain the difference between a regular Medicare supplemental policy and Medicare Advantage and why the latter is not a good thing?
So I want to preface this all by saying when it's your health, mm-hmm. you have to make decisions that are right for you and your situation.
Right.
I just want to say that up front. Now, when you back up, Medicare Advantage is just a scam. It's literally the private insurers have drilled their way into the traditional Medicare system, and they are extracting from the system the healthiest people they can, the people that they don't have to spend money on, leaving the sicker, older folks with more complex health cases to traditional Medicare. Literally, the only way that private insurance can make money is by taking your premium, denying you care.
Right.
In traditional Medicare, there is no denying you care. In Medicare Advantage, there is.
Ah.
There is denying you care. They restrict choice. They
mm-hmm.
they have the narrow networks. They're totally incomprehensible gobbledygook. So you literally don't know what you're getting. That's on purpose. It's on purpose that it's confusing, Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem is that traditional Medicare has these gaps. That's the problem.
Yeah.
The supplemental insurance to cover those gaps, you know, people have to spend out-of-pocket money on.
Yeah.
And so there's a very rational choice that a person might make, especially if they're feeling healthy or they are healthy, according to their doctors, that they're going to take the Medicare Advantage plan because it literally gives them more at that point. But the problem is they get sick. They need complex care. they'll find very quickly that Medicare Advantage is private insurance.
Right.
You can get denied. You've got that same bureaucrat in the $3,000 suit standing between you and your doctor. Medicare Advantage proves beyond the shadow of a doubt the danger of leaving the private insurers in existence in any way when we create an improved Medicare for All system. That we should look at Medicare Advantage and see that the private insurance industry's whole game is to using, I mean, and you're talking big amounts of money here, huge amounts of money. So these are sophisticated operations.
Mm-hmm.
They can buy your data from data brokers and make sure that they are targeting their advertisements online, on social media, so that the healthiest people who do not need care enroll in their plans, leaving the people who have complex health conditions on traditional Medicare, which is called, in you know, the term of art is cream skimming. And that the whole point is they want people that they don't have to pay anything for. They want people who are going to pay in and they don't have to pay anything out. They
right.
don't want people who need health care.
Right. Well, I get that. But you know, they blanket the airwaves with these commercials offering $0 premiums for these great supplemental plans that will, again, include vision and dental. And they don't charge you anything, but they don't say only call if you're healthy. I mean, do they put exclusions on there when you try to enroll if you're older and not healthy?
So the unethical thing, unethical is way too nice. The evil thing is that, so they target it to try to find people who are, you know, who are healthier.
Mm-hmm.
But folks who need care won't find out what the problems with Medicare Advantage are until they need care. That's when they're going to find out that, you know, that's when the bureaucrat in the $3,000 suit will send them the letter that says, oh, actually, we don't cover that place that you need to go to because it's out of network, or
yeah.
that's not actually something that we cover without pre-approval, prior authorization,
right.
and all these other bureaucratic garbage, which just means we're not going to give you the health care that your doctor has determined you need because it would decrease our profits. So the terrible thing about Medicare Advantage is that for too many people, I completely understand up front, if you're feeling healthier, you don't actually know the difference between Medicare Advantage or traditional Medicare, you look at it and you say, I want vision and dental coverage,
yeah.
so I'm going to go that way.
Right.
But then you have a complex health need, and that's when you find out that this is just private insurance, and they're going to deny you care.
Whenever
because
they
that's
can.
How they make money.
Right. The other problem, though, is it's not only because you're healthy and you feel good and so you'll take the Medicare Advantage. The other problem is the expense. Now, we're told, you know, Medicare, we pay into it our whole lives. We work. That's why I call them earned benefits. But
right.
to get the regular Medicare supplement, which I think is offered by United Healthcare, so there's also a for-profit company in there.
Yeah,
it is way expensive. I mean, we started looking into it, and I knew
yeah.
just from doing this show all these years and hearing, you know, Medicare Advantage bad, that we didn't want to go that route. But in order to get my husband decent coverage, he may as well not be on Medicare and just dealing with me on the exchange, trying to get a decent plan for not too much money. It doesn't exist. So we looked at Medicare Advantage, and we're seeing all these great plans with zero extra dollars to be paid as a premium. And I'm wondering how they can do that. Does the government pay the for-profit insurance company for each Medicare
yes.
Advantage person they sign up?
Yes, it's a total scam, because what they do is they get paid more.
Wow.
We spend more dollar for dollar. So for each dollar we spend on Medicare, we spend more on Medicare Advantage. So I just to make it easy, say we spend $1.75 for each dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But what the insurance companies do is they take 15 of that cent and they buy vision and dental that they can offer for quote unquote free. But in point of fact, they're getting 60 cents right from the taxpayer.
Wow.
And they deny care to those who need it. So it's really a complete scam. But it's also why I preface talking about this from the policy angle that when it comes to your health, you have to make the decision
right.
that is best for you.
I get it.
And it's just true. It's not just your, right? Because your financial ability, your financing is part of your health, right? Like
right.
You need to be able to afford to live.
Right.
So I understand you look at what's out there and you say, I'm going to actually go with this Medicare Advantage plan. The problem is it's just continuing the private insurance thing, which is it forces people to gamble with their health and their financial security because it does not, it leaves you still open to, that the terrible, exactly, that something happens and all of a sudden you get denied and then you end up paying out of pocket and you can become, you can go bankrupt.
Yeah.
And you thought you had Medicare, but in fact you had private insurance that was masquerading as Medicare.
Now,
and it was not clear that this was even possible.
In one of the last budgets or continuing resolutions or something under Obama, there was a cut, and the Republicans were positioning it as he cut $500 million from Medicare. I think that was the number. I'm not exactly sure. It turns out the cut was actually from Medicare Advantage, and the Republicans were screaming that Obama's cutting Medicare. So I guess. It's just a screwy situation in the Medicare for All that Bernie Sanders is talking about that we're all hoping becomes a reality sometime in our lifetimes. Would Medicare Advantage be eliminated?
Eliminated, along with the rest of the private insurance industry. Mm. The problem with our system, here's one thing. I refuse to say that it's a broken system. I refuse because it's not broken. It's just not a healthcare system. It's
right.
a wealth extraction system to make a small group of billionaires wealthy by holding our health hostage. You saw the thing that went around social media about the woman who needed the heart transplant, and they denied her and said, you should go fundraise
right.
for
yes.
$10,000, and then yep. we'll give you a transplant.
Right.
Do you know that the person who runs the company that does that is Betsy DeVos's husband? So, I mean, this is no exaggeration. There is a handful of billionaires who see us as marks that they are going to reach into our pocket and steal our money. And they're going to use the quote-unquote health insurance industry to do that. So the problem is the health insurance industry.
Yeah.
That's the problem. So the solution cannot allow the problem to continue to exist. So what an improved Medicare for All system is you take traditional Medicare, you add vision, you add dental, mm-hmm. you add hearing, you get rid of the gap, no more out-of-pocket costs. That's on day one.
You add prescription drugs and let Medicare negotiate with the drug companies for prices?
Exactly. And in point of fact, you use Bernie Sanders and Ro Khanna's latest bill. Social Security Works also fights to lower prescription drug prices because it's part and parcel of this whole thing.
Right.
Right? Like if you have health care, but you can't afford your drugs, you don't have health care. Right. Like that's
mm-hmm.
That's exactly right, though. We expand Medicare to everyone. We improve Medicare. And I want to say this because I think it gets lost.
Yeah.
The person on Medicare right now, Donald Trump is trying to turn current Medicare beneficiaries against Medicare for All, saying it's going to take away from them. I want people to understand that the first thing it does is it improves Medicare. And from where I'm standing, I don't care if someone supports improved Medicare for All because of the for all part or the improved part. It's fine. I don't care. People should understand that improved Medicare for All, if this bill becomes law, all of those out-of-pocket expenses that go along with gap insurance, or with Medicare Advantage, they go away on day one.
Right.
On day one.
Wow.
And then over time, in the Bernie Sanders version of the bill, and Pramila Jayapal is carrying it in the House, in the Bernie Sanders version of the bill, over 4 years, Medicare then expands to include more and more people. First, it goes down to 55, and it gradually covers everybody. In year one, it goes down to 55.
Wow.
So this is just common sense. Right. Like we look across the border into Canada and like we're supposed to believe that we're the only country in the world in the developed world, industrialized nations that can't provide health care.
Yeah.
No, we're just the only country whose people are allowing these billionaires to hold our lives and our health hostage so that they can ride another golden yacht to Saint-Tropez and hide their money in the Cayman Islands.
We got to change things. Alex Lawson, thank you so much. I know you're up in Burlington for the Bernie Palooza. Thank you for stepping aside for a bit to talk to us about this, because it's so important and we're all, you know, in the middle of it right now. So at least it gives us something to work towards as we pull our hair out trying to deal with the system we have now. I really appreciate
Nicole,
it,
thank
Alex.
You for having me on.
Always
and
a
can
pleasure.
Can I say one final word?
Definitely.
One thing is, before the political revolution, we need to have a media revolution that you're leading. We need to have truth tellers out there telling the people what the corporate interests are doing. Because when the people know, then we can raise our voices together and we can change this system.
Absolutely.
So much,
and you know what? I just got to say, you're also doing your part in this, you know, media world, because Alex Lawson is one of the owners of We Act Radio in Washington, D.C. So thank you for keeping that going, too. Alex, I will talk to you soon. Enjoy Bernie Palooza. Give Bernie a kiss for me.
Thanks, Nicole. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right. I know I'm more confused now than ever. I just wanted to get that out there because it's important to know. Medicare Advantage, I mean, it was how we had to go, because zero premium as opposed to many hundreds of dollars to get almost the same coverage in a regular gap policy that is not through Medicare Advantage. It's a lose-lose situation, and it sucks. And so we're all in the same, you know, health insurance mess together. All right, I'm running late. Gaius Publius is coming up. We're going to talk about the climate change report, but there's so much going on with the Russia thing and trying to keep all the news from yesterday straight. So I've got a quick edition of What's News for you, and then we'll be back afterwards with Gaius Publius next. Thanks for sticking around. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
A surprise appearance by Donald Trump's one-time lawyer and fixer Michael Cohen in court Thursday morning to plead guilty to lying to Congress seems to have taken the Mueller probe to a new level. Cohen had originally said talks between himself and Trump about a proposed Trump Tower project in Moscow ended in January 2016, right before the start of primary season. Cohen now admits that was a lie, and one he told out of a sense of obligation to Trump. The revelations are significant because they appear to show Trump was engaged in business dealings with Russia in the midst of a campaign in which Moscow interfered to help elect him. Trump responded by attacking Michael Cohen as he was departing the White House Thursday, headed to Argentina for the G20 summit.
And he's a weak person. And by being weak, unlike other people that you watch, he's a weak person. And what he's trying to do is get a reduced sentence. So he's lying about a project that everybody knew about. I mean, we were very open with it. We were thinking about building a building. I guess we had in a form. It was an option. I don't know what you'd call it. I decided ultimately not to do it. There would have been nothing wrong if I did do it. If I did do it, there would have been nothing wrong. That was my business. So he's lying very simply to get a reduced sentence. Okay.
But an hour after leaving on Air Force One, Trump tweeted out a message saying that he had canceled his planned meeting with Vladimir Putin. CNN's Jeff Zeleny is with the president in Argentina.
President Trump is suddenly keeping his distance from Russian President Vladimir Putin, abruptly canceling their one-on-one meeting at the G20 summit. An hour after saying this today while leaving the White House,
I think it's a very good time to have the meeting.
The president changing course while flying here to Argentina, saying on Twitter, it would be the best for all parties concerned to cancel. He blamed it on Russia's refusal to release Ukrainian Navy ships and sailors seized in a confrontation last weekend. But he's been nearly silent on that matter for days. The only thing that changed is today's bombshell in the Russia investigation. His former fixer, Michael Cohen, pleading guilty to new charges, saying he lied about how much the president knew during the 2016 campaign about trying to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. The president said his longtime lawyer was lying.
BuzzFeed capped off the day with another bombshell, reporting that the Trump administration considered giving Russian President Vladimir Putin a $50 million penthouse in their proposed Trump Tower Moscow to entice Russian oligarchs to buy apartments. BuzzFeed's Jason Leopold broke the story.
The plan was discussed prior to January 2016 when Michael Cohen said that all of the negotiations related to Trump Tower Moscow ended. Felix Sater is the one who said he came up with the idea for giving Vladimir Putin or handing that penthouse to Vladimir Putin as a way to entice oligarchs into purchasing the rest of the apartments in Trump Tower Moscow, in which Trump Organization and Michael Cohen and Felix Sater could earn quite a bit of money. It apparently, obviously, didn't get very far because the entire project fizzled. But Michael Cohen did discuss this with a representative, Vladimir Putin's press secretary. And as we saw it in the complaint against Michael Cohen, what we saw was that there were phone calls that that Michael Cohen had with Dmitry Peskov, with the representatives for Dmitry Peskov, in which he said previously that those communications never took place. He sent an email, and that was the last of it. But we now know that those conversations were quite extensive.
So, you got the president's basically his number two, his deputy, Michael Cohen, talking to the office of Putin's number two, whether that's Peskov himself or his assistant. Okay. Your reporting suggests that the plan to give Putin the $50 million penthouse, that was actually discussed by Cohen when he was talking to Peskov's office?
Yes, in fact, it was. We have confirmation from that from at least four sources.
Neil Katchal, former Solicitor General under Obama, said Thursday's events could mark the beginning of the end of Trump's presidency.
The facts aren't all in, but I think we very well could look back on this day, November 29th, 2018, as the beginning of the end of the Trump presidency. And I say that for three reasons.
Please,
we've been talking about the criminal stuff that Mueller has on Trump, but there are two other important things going on. One is the House investigation. Now the House is controlled by Democrats. They'll take power in January. They'll be able to investigate all of these lies to Congress. And the second is, even if the Democrats don't want to do it, impeachment. They almost are going to have to look at it very, very seriously now, because this isn't just criminal. This is the president campaigning in 2016 and hiding all of his negotiations with Russia, with the Kremlin itself and the number two person at the Kremlin. So that, you know, that's bad. And the American people obviously should have had a right to know that at the time. But also just think about the last 2 years have been a period of intense compromise. The Russians have known that Trump lied to the American people for 2 years. And imagine all the things, subtle things they could have done to get their bidding done over the last 2 years.
In other news, the new North American trade deal, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, was signed by the leaders of the three countries on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Buenos Aires. The USMCA replaces NAFTA and establishes new rules for the auto industry and digital trade, but faces an uphill fight in Congress. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All rise for Gaius Publius.
That's not his real name.
You call Gaius Publius into question?
Sure.
Very well. For the audience at home.
What is the real name of Gaius Publius?
Gaius Publius.
Wow! Another winner!
Joins Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com.
All right. Oh, we're running a few minutes late, but Gaius Publius is finally with us. You there?
I am here.
Yay. Thank you so much for being here today. It turned out to be a busy Friday with, you know, all the stuff breaking. Today is a day I could have used a two-hour show. But all the Russia stuff is just enough to make your head explode. But then again, so is all the climate change stuff. And watching the president sort of poo-poo science it goes beyond words. So last week, the Trump administration released what it calls I don't, the climate report. What are they calling this thing?
The National Climate Assessment.
Thank you. And it was something that this is, I think, the second or third one they've done. It's mandated by Congress that they do this. And it was supposed to be released in December. But the Trump administration hurried it up to get it out and release it the day after Thanksgiving as sort of the ultimate document dump, thinking that, oh, it's a big holiday weekend. No one's going to pay attention. It turned out, though, that because it was such a slow news time, this thing actually got a lot of coverage, as it should. And Donald Trump poo-pooed it. So was there anything new in this report?
Oh, boy. Well, there's really nothing new. As you and I discussed this offline, the bottom line is still the bottom line. It's coming.
Yeah.
What's interesting is not just the data in the report. The data in the report's interesting. For example, $500 billion a year in lost crop to the economy in mm-hmm. lost crops.
Yeah.
Is what we're facing into. $500 billion a year is half a trillion. And that's per year. But there's what's really interesting is what's going on around this report. First of all, on the one hand, the fact that Donald Trump buried it got it all kinds of news, mm-hmm. which is great.
Yes.
On the other hand, the fact that Donald Trump buried it got it all kinds of news because the news is anti-Trump.
Yes.
And in fact, there is no political party of the two that we have viable in the United States that will fix this problem. Not a single one of them will do it.
Right.
So it's not a Trump problem. That's just the veneer. Behind the veneer is a political and economic structure that will keep this problem in place until it kills us.
Yeah. Now the reason that neither party will do anything about it is because of all the money that the fossil fuels industry is pouring into their coffers?
Well, that's certainly part of it. That's mm-hmm. a very big part of it. So let's look at what has to happen. The fossil fuel industry as an industry, A, has to be eliminated as from the economy, period. And B, it has to be eliminated very, very soon. So the tentacles of the consequences of that spread actually quite far. It's not just that the fossil fuel company is buying Congress, both parties, hand over fist. That's part of the problem, but not the only problem. The other problem is people really don't want to face into that. I mean, and that's being fed by the fossil fuel companies themselves through their American Petroleum Institute ads and so forth.
Right.
The American Petroleum Institute has basically been running ads that say, you like that flat screen economy you got? You like all those perks of modern life? You better keep fossil fuel as part of the mix or you're going to lose them.
Wow.
And the fact is, that's correct. So the current generation is choosing between disrupting its lifestyle and a life as hunter-gatherers for the second generation down.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, moving,
taking
a giant step backwards. There was a TV show that premiered a couple of years ago. I think I watched the first episode and then realized it was, you know, bad television. But the premise was interesting. There was some kind of like a worldwide global power surge or something. And all the electricity, you know, everything went. So there was no more. There was no phone. There was no electricity. There was no any means of mass communication or anything. They had to go back to, as you say, the hunter-gatherer age and try to live without all those modern luxuries, I guess, if you can call electricity a luxury. I guess in Puerto Rico they did for the last year. That was an interesting premise of what it would take to get people to step back from using all this, you know, fossil fuel power and the other things that are – scientists tell us are hurting the planet.
Well, from a moral standpoint, and there's other standpoints to look at this, but from a moral standpoint, the current generation, the people who are in charge now, meaning all of us who are adults,
mm-hmm.
are are basically using up the last of the modern lifestyle in a way that guarantees that nobody in the future will have that lifestyle. Now, what that means, I don't know what the TV show showed in terms of everybody has to go back to
right. Well, cars didn't work. I mean, nothing. Right. Yeah.
But what they really do need to show is a reduction of the human population to maybe a tenth of what we are within a generation or two.
Yeah.
Now, if you picture that, what does that look like?
I think the fires looks like California looked last week. It looks like Puerto Rico looked for the last year after Hurricane Maria. It looks like these thousand-year storms and floods that are happening every year. I think that's what it looks like. I think we're already there.
Well, our toe is in the water. There's no question. And our toe's not going to come out of the water. It's just going to engulf more and more of us. But really, that is just the toe in the water. Hmm. What happens, for example, when Texas is economically unviable as a place to live because it's so hot that you can't go outdoors?
Or that it's underwater, like Houston after Harvey.
Correct. So there's going to be mass migration within the United States as the population moves north, right?
Yep.
And what's going to happen to the economy? So you're going to have all of these migrants coming into Nebraska, and now according to the climate assessment, the Ogallala Aquifer, which is drying up, the western part will disappear of the Ogallala Aquifer, which means Kansas and Nebraska. So there's no fresh water. They're going to move north. Ultimately, the population of the United States is going to be packed against the Canadian border.
Wow. You know,
do you think the Canadians are going to like it?
No. No, I know the Canadians don't want us there. I mean, I understand because I looked into what it would take to move to Canada. I'm too old, apparently. You know, you got to be younger and healthy and have a job to go to. Ain't happening. And what we're seeing, you know, Trump do at the border here is, who knows, maybe Canada, you know, trying to keep Americans out in the not too distant future.
In fact, I think I can picture a future in like 2050 or 2060 when the Canadians do on the U.S.-Canadian border what the Israelis do on the Palestinian border and their border with Syria, which is they send bomber strikes to thin the herd because these people are dangerous.
So the dangers are going to be coming not only from the natural forces of Mother Nature in a world where the temperature is rising, but from countries, governments trying to keep, you know, those nasty immigrants out. I should mention, I called you to talk about this national climate assessment that was released by a group of 300 scientists and American organizations. This followed by about a month another climate report, which was from the UN, the IPCC, which you wrote about extensively at Down with Tyranny.
Correct.
And that was more of a global, through the United Nations, I believe, this report. And both of them offered really, just horrific looks into the future. And of course, when Donald Trump was asked about the most recent report, this is what he said.
I've seen it. I've about read the report. Some of it, and it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah, I don't believe it. No, he doesn't believe it.
And then when he was, you might remember when he was in California touring the damage from the wildfires there, he was asked, he actually said this.
Does seeing this devastation, though, change your opinion at all on climate change, Mr. President?
No. I have a strong opinion. I want great climate.
He wants great climate.
And we're going to have forests that are very safe. So we can't go through this every year. We go through this. So we're going to have...
Okay, we're going to have great climate. I mean, what does that even mean? We have a guy who doesn't believe the scientists. He trusts his gut, and he says we're going to have great climate. It's not only unconscionable, it's really irresponsible. We are the only nation in the world who has not signed on to the Paris Climate Accord. There was another one, I think it was Guatemala, because it didn't go far enough, and then they ultimately signed on to it. It might not have been Guatemala.
I really do resist Nicole making this a Trump problem or a Trump issue.
Because
so let's go to the IPCC report. Okay. This was a special report on the effects of global warming of 1.5 degrees centigrade Celsius.
Uh-huh.
And not just 2 degrees. 2 degrees has been the target all along. It was an arbitrary target to begin with. But at the climate accords, at the climate meetings in Paris, a whole lot of the nations that were most vulnerable said, 2 degrees will kill us. We need to look at what happens at 1.5 degrees because we're kind of almost there.
Yeah.
And so they released – they took a year or so and released the special report on 1.5 degrees. So there's a lot of stuff in the report, but I just want to give one data point. And this is from an extremely conservative, not hair on fire organization. I mean their hair's on fire, but they won't point it out. They want to minimize it because the UN is funded by nations.
Right.
And nations are political entities.
Yeah.
In order to – there, thing one, there's hope. Thing two, in order to achieve what we hope to achieve, we need to reduce carbon emissions globally 45% from the 2010 number by 2030.
Yeah.
That's 20 years to do a let's call it a 50% reduction in carbon emissions globally. Now, the U.S. is a big emitter, so we can look at the big nations, U.S., China, India, and so forth. Let's just talk about the U.S. because we have control of the U.S.
Sort of.
What will it take to reduce carbon emissions by 45% by 2030? And by the way, that's conservative. I think it needs to be like by 25 or something like that. We're kind of up against it.
Yeah.
One, again, we have to kill the fossil fuel industry, and we have to do it at an aggressive rate, even if it means rationing,
mm-hmm.
and build out our infrastructure, build out our renewables infrastructure. We could have the big screen lifestyle, but we have to do the cost of conversion first. And sometimes the cost of conversion, as in World War II, requires rationing. And then the emergency is over, everything's converted, and you go back off rationing. But the other thing is we have to remove from power all of the politicians who enable the non-response or the go slow response or you don't want to hurt us response. That means that everybody in political power who is part of the problem has to be eliminated.
That's going to be a lot of them.
Killed.
Right.
I mean
right.
removed from power.
Sure.
And that's both – parties.
Right. Well, of course. And you know, and it starts with eliminating the conflicts of interest. Basically, stop taking money from these fossil fuel companies. And you can go to opensecrets.org and see who's taking the money. And there are guilty people on both sides.
Well, yeah, but it's more than just the money.
Uh-huh.
I mean, let's say I'm a member of Congress and I'm not taking fossil fuel money.
Okay.
But I'm looking at the fact that 45% reduction in 10 years?
It's impossible.
What will I vote for that kind of convulsion
mm-hmm.
in the economy? I'm up for re-election in
right.
2 years.
Right.
Will I sacrifice my career to take that vote even if I believe in it?
Uh-huh.
It's a much more complicated thing than the economy.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Than the taking of the money.
Okay.
It's committing the country to go through the kind of all of a sudden everything is 180 and the government controls the economy. A lot of people are just philosophically opposed to a government controlled economy, but that's what it's going to take, which means that it is doable, but it's only going to be doable because people like you, me, and everybody listening insists on it and is willing to take that step and is willing to do what's morally responsible, which is to call people who are not taking that step murderers.
In fact, a couple of weeks ago,
they are.
Right, a couple of weeks ago, you have a post up at Down with Tyranny, and I'm going to link to these four reports that you wrote at Down with Tyranny dealing with this topic. But the November 12th post is titled "What's a Morally Appropriate Response to Climate Deniers?" And you know, and in this case, let me say, as you said, it's not only about the money. It's not only about the climate deniers. It's also, although that's a big problem, but there's also those in positions of power who know the problem and won't act to do anything to ameliorate the effects or to turn things around. And as we've learned from these reports and other warnings, we don't have any more time.
If there was a mafia chieftain in let's say your town was 100 people or 200 people, mm-hmm. and there was a mafia guy who was murdering people, what would the townspeople do to that guy? I'm not looking at violence,
right.
But would anybody do business with him?
No, of course not.
Would they freeze him out of society?
Yes,
Would they try to destroy him economically and make him move?
Yeah.
As a country, we're surrounded by these people and we enable them and we individually enable them. This piece, What's a Morally Appropriate Response to Climate Deniers, which I recommend, focuses on a guy who decided to take all the climate deniers in his immediate family and sit Shiva on them.
Uh-huh.
Declare them dead to him. That's not a political stance. That means I've got an aunt or an uncle that is a big Trumpist. Oh. And I say to the rest of the family, I want nothing to do with this person. They're not welcome in my house. Their children are not welcome. Well, maybe don't go as far as the children. But these people are dead to me. And then you make it stick for the rest of your life until they change.
Yeah, you said you have to shun them. But can you shun the people in government who are not doing the work that needs to be done?
I think you can. That's a more complicated – the answer is yes.
Uh-huh.
And that's a more complicated question than just can you shun them, because the mechanisms are different. But let's start in your personal life. What would happen in this country if everybody who believed as we do that we're screwed that was your note to me, right, when
mm-hmm.
we talked about this show?
Right.
The
yep.
bottom line is we're screwed.
Yeah.
So if you really believe that, you have a picture of what that means, and you've got grandchildren and children.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do in your life to take that seriously, to deal with the people who are the enablers of the Pelosi's who want to go slow, of the Trumps who want to go fast in the wrong direction?
Uh-huh.
What do you do in your life to those people? Because it's not going to happen because a small cadre of people changes the government. It's going to happen because of what happened in the Great Depression, when the mass of people saw a problem, rose up as one, put Roosevelt in office, said, here's your mandate, fix it, and we will accept a government-controlled economy if you will fix it. And he did his best.
Right. But are the masses in this country, known for its excesses, the, you know, fat American, are they going to give up all these creature comforts, the luxury of, you know, having a car? Look, GM is closing all these plants because they're phasing out the Chevy Volt in favor of big SUVs and gas guzzlers. Obviously, we've
right.
learned nothing.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. From the standpoint of you're reading a novel, you know,
mm-hmm.
when people drown in a novel, you don't drown reading it. You just read about people drowning in a novel.
Yeah.
If you're looking at this from the standpoint of a novel, it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out, because either it will play out towards a solution that I've been identifying, or it will play out in increasing chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And the social contract is already broken. It's just that even though the rich have broken their obligation to the rest of society, the rest of society hasn't broken its obligation to the rich or to each other. They've broken their obligation to segments of each other. That was true since slavery.
Yeah.
But they haven't broken their obligations to the town next door.
Right.
For example.
Right.
But as the social contract breaks apart in this country, it's just going to be absolutely fascinating. It's going to make the decline and fall of the Roman Empire look like a fishing tale.
Can
you
I
know,
say
old man at sea or something?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. It's devastating. I mean, I get upset when I hear somebody's pregnant because I can't imagine bringing a child into the world as it is now, knowing what they're going to face in 20 or 30 years or less. Guys, Publius did some great work down with Tierney. I'm going to post links to four of the articles that you posted over the last month or so on the subject so people can find them easily. But they are at Down with Tierney. Guys, Publius, thank you so much. Always great to talk
One
to you. Yeah?
One last word.
Yes.
Action is the antidote to depression.
Good to know. That's a good piece of advice to carry around. All right.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Take care.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. And I neglected, as somebody who lived through the Northridge earthquake back in, when was it, 1996, I want to say, or I thought the world was coming to an end, I want to send my sincerest thoughts and wishes out to the people of Alaska. They had a 7.0 earthquake this morning. The tsunami warning was canceled, but there's devastating damage. Houses are gone near Anchorage, and so in the big population center of Alaska. So, you know, best wishes to the people of Alaska. You have a wonderful weekend. We'll start all over again on Tuesday. Thank you for listening. As always, I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.